Do you experience painful periods? Are you struggling to conceive? Today, I interview Dr. Kelsey Duncan all about endometriosis. We discuss what symptoms may make you suspect this condition that causes pain and can affect fertility. We talk about the complex world of endo, from diagnosis difficulty to management, and which paths may be required for conception. She shares her favorite go-to tips for endo and so much more. Without further ado, let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Today, I have the honor of interviewing Dr. Kelsey Duncan, naturopathic doctor all about endometriosis. After being told at a young age that she might struggle getting pregnant without receiving adequate support or guidance, Dr. Kelsey embarked on a mission to offer better healthcare to women. She firmly believes women deserve the information to make quality decisions, the support they need to be successful, and the confidence in knowing they are doing everything within their power to make a baby. Through her three-pillar fertility success system, Dr. Kelsey and her team have helped bring hundreds of babies into the world using evidence-based medicine and supporting couples regardless of where they are on their fertility journey. When she's not helping couples reach their fertility goals, you can find Dr. Kelsey spending time with her two kids, watching trashy reality TV when they go to bed, and enjoying time up north by the water. Oh, Dr. Kelsey, I'm so happy to have you, and I'm so excited for us to talk about endometriosis today. Before we get started, can you just kind of share a little bit about your experience with endo and why this is something that you like to talk about and share?
Yeah, so thanks for having me, first and foremost. But yeah. I got into naturopathic medicine starting from a journey with acne, and so I had horrible cystic acne, did all the things. The doctors kept giving me birth control after birth control. I felt like I was just like working my way through that. I had my, like, I call it my last ditch effort, which I feel like is a lot of what brings anyone into the naturopathic world, is like, well, I guess I'll try it. You know, nothing else has worked. And I had a really wonderful appointment with an ND in my university town that I was living in. And I walked out of that appointment feeling so heard and validated. And, you know, it started kind of my intrigue and interest in like, well, there's obviously more to this, right? Like She pointed out a lot of aspects of my diet and certain nutrients that I could be doing differently. And it really got the wheels spinning for me around how, and I was already kind of like on this path to medicine. I wanted to help people. I originally wanted to be a pharmacist, and it really kind of spurred this interest in me. And like, there's a different way of doing things and investigating and treating my body. And fast forward a few years, that's how I found myself studying at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. And through my journey there and our experience, another experience in the medical world with my own reproductive system. And that again spurred this huge, you know, fire in me saying like, women are just not being treated well in the medical space for a wide variety of reasons. You know, there's lack of research, there's lack of options in that stream. And a lot of us, myself included, as an early 20-something, didn't know there was other ways or other options to look at. So through that and through my fertility journey is how I started working with a lot of women with endometriosis. And Either they were coming to me knowing they had endo or coming to me trying to get pregnant and it wasn't working. And that, if I thought there was a complication in, especially I'll speak to, I'm in Ontario, Canada. So in our medical stream, our medical world here, in terms of getting diagnosed of endo and proper management and treatment, I thought there was this huge gap in women's healthcare before. And once I started working more and more in the endo community, it just became so apparent how mismanaged this diagnosis is, both inside the fertility space and outside. I had many clients before I really got into being solely in fertility treatment who I was like, well, I think you have endo. And they'd be like, oh yeah, my doctor told me I have endo, but they just told me to come back when I'm trying to get pregnant. And I would work with these women long enough sometimes that that would then happen. But the come back when you're trying to get pregnant would then turn into, well, let's try for a while and see what happens. And so we know from the research that early diagnosis and management is not good in the infertility space. And yet we're watching these women, and I see it every day in my community, just continue to slip through the cracks. So such an important piece to talk about.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for the work that you're doing. And I think, you know, endo is a tricky thing, like many other diagnoses and conditions and syndromes, where the conventional model is not, it doesn't understand the complexity, I think, that goes into some of these endocrine imbalances and reproductive issues. And it's like, there's not just one pill that you take and solve this problem. You know, it's not that simple. And I think that sometimes people just don't know what to do with that. So thank you for doing what you do. I'm so grateful to have you here. I've gotten a lot of questions about this. So my first question is, when would someone suspect endo? Like, you as a doctor or as a woman listening to this, what are kind of some of the symptoms that point toward that being a factor? Because I think a lot of women go years and years and years and have no idea that they have endometriosis because they don't even know what to look for.
Right. The big thing for me is pain. So, and this is a big subjective conversation, right? Because we all have different pain tolerance and thresholds. And at the same time, we all also have a different idea of what is quote unquote normal. Mm-hmm. And I think as women, a lot of us grow up as young girls, as teens, where it is within the realm of normal to be slightly uncomfortable in the early years of menstruation. And we're constantly just told, like, that's part of the process. Like, you're bleeding, it sucks. So, you know, get over it. Like, you're going to be fine. And I think that mentality of just trying to kind of push through it bleeds into the rest of our lives of being like, well, yeah, my periods are painful, but like, oh, they've always been like that. Yeah. And unless it's significant and we're, you know, losing days at work or it's actually happening outside of just that day one or day two is when women are actually taking it a little bit more seriously, and not because they don't take it seriously, but they're willing to actually bring that to their doctor, where outside of that, if they feel like they can manage, it's something that they might brush off in passing in an appointment, but not actually be managed or taken seriously. So it's one of the things we always want to screen for. So when I'm meeting with a new fertility client, we always ask, we ask all the questions about their periods, but like, do you experience pain? Mm-hmm. We leave that a little open-ended for them to kind of describe to us, like, yes, and when is it? How intense it is? Can you rate it for me? Do you take any medication for that pain? And we use that as kind of a starting ground, because the reality is we really don't have a lot of other screening tools, and the actual diagnostic piece of endo is complicated. So there isn't really like a simple blood test we can run. We have CA125 as a potential marker, but if it's negative, it's not exact that it's not endo. So we play around with that to help, but it's not a perfect system either. Mm-hmm. So we want to look for pain. We want to look specifically for first to start pain kind of in that lead into menstruation and during menstruation. But we always want to keep in the back of our minds that women with higher staged endo can have pain, pelvic pain at any time in the cycle, or ovulation pain tends to be more intense. That might be something we need to screen for. And chronic pain in general, you know, are you dealing with any other type of abdominal back pain that might be telling us like, hey, there's something here that's maybe just a bit more than inflammation that we need to look a little bit deeper. And we know from the research that specifically in the fertility community, women who are experiencing significant menstrual pain and aren't getting pregnant, it's like an 85% positive predictive value for endometriosis. So wow. The second someone's coming to me because they're not getting pregnant and I'm hearing, oh, and by the way, my periods really suck. They're super painful. Like for 3 days I'm, you know, in bed or on the couch or I'm okay as long as I keep up with the Tylenol and Advil. It's an immediate like, okay, we need to start having this conversation around how are we going to get this assessed.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I think it is interesting because we as humans, we do kind of assume sometimes that what we're going through is just normal. I think I see that in so many different situations, you know, where people will be like, oh, it's just normal to be like really irritable and aggressive before my period. Or especially if you have family members. So endo isn't always genetic, but if like your mother had painful periods or your aunts or your sisters, then you're like, oh, this is what every woman experiences, you know, and you don't think that it's abnormal. And we just don't talk about it. And more now with social media, I think women are waking up to the idea of what is or isn't normal. The same can go with painful intercourse. I don't know if you see that very much with endo, but that's a big passion of mine. Which I haven't talked about lately, but I experienced years and years and years of painful intercourse, but for different reasons. But everyone always, you know, would think, oh, do you have endo? And maybe I do have levels of it. But that's another thing where, you know, women can have pain. And sometimes people are like, oh, this is just normal, even though I would say more often than not, women see that painful intercourse is not normal, but painful periods very much are seen as like, oh, that's just how it is.
Yeah. Or painful bowel movements is another one you want to screen for as well. And just knowing that, like, especially with the painful intercourse, like let's actually circle back to that for a second, because I will agree with you, like that will often come up, but there's also that stigma, right? Like you might not feel comfortable bringing that up with your old male doctor. And then it can go years and years and years of you being like, oh, this isn't great. But like, who am I supposed to talk to about that? And so that's definitely something, regardless if it's fertility related, endo related, that no one should have to kind of keep in their back pocket as their little secret.
Yeah. And when you have pain with intercourse, this is kind of a digression, but because I've experienced that for so many years, it can really affect your libido.
Totally.
Because you don't have a desire to have sex when it ends up being painful. But I've been to so many doctors, especially conventional doctors, who I tell about my libido, and they'll literally say, welcome to womanhood, or like, you know, no one likes to have sex or whatever, like whatever their own stuff is that they're projecting. Yeah. And so women do go unnoticed and unheard. And a lot of doctors, you know, their solution, and they really believe that they're solving the root cause, is by prescribing birth control. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and we see that with endo as well, and you know, heavy periods, painful periods, like any sort of period complaint. And how I kind of explain it to my women in our community is like, it's not necessarily their fault. I think everyone can kind of get up on their soapbox about conventional medicine and like, rah, rah, they've treated women so poorly. And it's like, sure, I had that experience. Absolutely. Like that was their only option for me for many, many years to help with something that was never going to be helped by the birth control pill once I figured all my stuff out. Mm-hmm. But they also don't know any different. Like they're not trained any different. Their playbook tells them this, and that's what they're doing, and that's their gold standard of care. And it is what it is. And it's up to us as an individual to either accept that or say, like, is there another choice? And understand that there's other ways that we can potentially approach this. So for endo, that's where we need to have some flexibility, because if there is, again, outside of the fertility journey, because obviously if we're trying to get pregnant, we're not going on the birth control to help manage our symptoms.
Right.
But leading into that, there does need to be some wiggle room of birth control might be your gold standard of care in that moment for pain management. Mm-hmm. And that there's no shame in that. And so that's where I find it becomes challenging, especially in our community, is there's still a lot of extremes of like, I just had a post a couple weeks ago go like mini teensy weensy viral. And there was a whole conversation around how like women wishing they never went on birth control and other women being like, what are you talking about? Like that's bad. But there was a lot of like very, not aggressive, but extreme views of how horrible this is, when in the reality, like there are some women that really don't have a choice, especially in the endo community from a pain management perspective. And so finding that happy medium is so important. And then also having that support to transition off when the time comes for you wanting to have a family, because then we are going to have to deal with the nutrient deficiencies and the hormonal fluctuations that you haven't had up until this point to both try and keep you comfortable and help get you back to being in that good fertile space.
Yeah, I love that. I think an important thing for people to remember is they're all tools, right? And, you know, birth control and medications and pharmaceuticals are tools. And we have a lot of other tools as well as naturopathic doctors. And ultimately getting to the root cause is the goal. But sometimes, like I had an endo patient who was in grad school and, you know, we worked on all the root cause things, the dietary factors, the gut health, the toxins, but stress was a big flare factor for her.
Yeah.
And she was in grad school and we did all the things that we could to support her. But at the end of the day, her pain was so extreme that she couldn't get through her day and her stress level wasn't going to go away unless she quit her program. Right. And so, you know, in those situations, you know, I prescribed, we had her go on the IUD instead of the pill. She had been on the pill before, but you know, the pill could have been a good option if she wanted it. But it's like, you have to just understand where the patient is at that time. What is important, I think, is even if you choose to use something like birth control, is that you don't neglect all the underlying factors. And I think, you know, this is what I talk a lot about with birth control, is it's not necessarily that birth control is evil. It's that we as a society and as health and women, we don't actually support the holistic piece. And so when women then get off the pill to get pregnant, no one has been talking to her about her diet or supporting with toxins or stress or trauma or any of these other things. And then they want to be pregnant right now. Yeah. And it's like, I wish, you know, that there were options where it's like, okay, let's work on all of these underlying factors. And if it's so extreme, you know, like let's support you with this pharmaceutical, but it's not this big shock once a woman wants to become pregnant and then has, you know, years of unraveling to do when there could have been support there.
Right. I think too, we just talked about this over on my podcast as well, around there's no conversation with, okay, you're on the pill. And if you do plan to have a family, coming off and wanting to be pregnant that very next month is likely not the best way to approach it. And we should have the conversation around extending that preconception care time. Mm-hmm. And how do you come off of the birth control, track your cycle for fertility, but also for us to not get you pregnant at a time you're not ready, but let your body recalibrate and get back to baseline, because it could take 6 months to a year for that to happen. Not everyone has a really easy time coming off the pill. And though that conversation at least wasn't happening for me, and it sounds like with my clients, it's definitely not something that's coming up, you know, when they're going on it at 14 and coming off it at 30, their doctor is just refilling, right? We're not actually having those conversations at the appropriate time.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So when you're working with a client, you're obviously thinking about pain, not if they're not able to get pregnant, if they're trying, that kind of points you toward endometriosis. I know there's a lot of kind of debate in the endo world if you should quote unquote diagnose it or not. Can you talk about that? How is endo actually diagnosed and how often are we actually doing that?
Right. Women? This is where it gets tricky.
I know.
This is where the blood starts to boil a little bit, because no, you can't, I can't sit here and say like, oh, you have pain and you're not getting pregnant and these other, you know, couple of things, like you definitely have endo. We can't do that. We don't know for sure. And I think the really scary part too is that you can have endo and actually not have significant pain, and you can have significant pain and not have uber aggressive endo. Like there's a lot of nuances with this condition that make it just that much more complicated. And gold standard of care when it comes to diagnosis is laparoscopic surgery. A lot of practitioners don't want to just go in for funsies and like take a peek around and see what's going on. And in some instances, it's like, sure, valid. I get that. And in my world, in the fertility space, I'm working with someone who's been trying for 18 months and they've got the signs and the pain to validate, that's when I get upset that this isn't the logical next step. It's usually like, well, let's try IVF and see what happens. But IVF isn't going to like outperform the endo if it's there. And we have a significant impact on egg quality and ovarian reserve if the endo is severe and left unmanaged. So that LAP is what I find, at least here in Ontario, incredibly challenging to advocate mm-hmm. for, and yet it's still our best way. There's more research coming in the world of specific diagnostic ultrasound and maybe MRI being less invasive, but I'm at least here not seeing that being done very often. There's one doctor here in Ontario that works at McMaster, Dr. Leombardi, that is like a huge spearhead for endo. And I know he's doing it and he's got probably a wait list of, I'm sure, you know, 3 years at this point. So it's just so challenging to find a practitioner that's like, yep, that sounds worth looking at. And this is how we're going to do it. And then safely remove it with fertility preservation in mind, because we can't just go in there and, you know, poke around and scalpel around and do all of our things. We have to be really, really delicate and careful that we're not causing extra scar tissue, or we're not touching the ovaries and potentially impacting the follicle development. So that the diagnosis part is truly the hardest part. It's mm-hmm. and it's something that still to this day, when I'm working with someone and they're describing their pain to me, and I'm just like, oh, why?
I know.
Oh, it just adds like a whole other layer of complication, because like, mm-hmm. I can't do this surgery for you. Mm-hmm. I wish I could, but I can't. And now we have to work really hard to find someone out there that's open to taking you seriously, because there still seems to be that disconnect there. And granted, like if we don't have to do surgery, awesome. But with endo, we have very little other options available to us right now. Right.
Yeah. So with that, let's back up. For anyone who doesn't know, when you're talking about like removing and the scar tissue, can you just briefly speak to those who don't know what exactly is endo and what are these things that we would be removing, yeah. you know, in a surgery? I'm sure some people who have yeah. endo probably know, but let's just like back up and remind people about that.
Basically, endometriosis is tissue from the endometrium growing in places that it shouldn't be. That's like mm-hmm. the best way to describe it. So it can grow around your fallopian tubes, around your ovaries, and near your cervix. And you can have endometriomas, which are, you know, like connected to the tissue, but they're protruding almost. So that's like within the uterine cavity, but you can also have extra uterine endometriosis. So that's typically when we're seeing those elevated stages. They stage it 1 to 4, I believe. I haven't heard anything higher than 4, so I don't believe there's a stage 5 yet, at least. But that 3-4 stage, we now have the potential to see those lesions around your colon, around your bladder, in those areas just outside of the uterus. I've had women have lesions around their lungs and all over their abdominal cavity and their rib cage. So that's obviously some fairly extensive endo going on, but it's possible mm-hmm. for it to be outside of the uterus as well, which is why we talk about too, like bowel pain, IBS symptoms and gut symptoms can be really common in women with IBS. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have tissue around your large and small intestine. You might just be dealing with a lot of inflammation, but that's also something to kind of keep in the back of your mind, depending on symptoms and flare and cycle timing and things like that. So when they're going in for removal, they can take those lesions out. But what we know from the research is if they are around the ovary, we want to be really, really cautious and careful. And so finding a surgeon who knows like, yes, I need this removed. And obviously pain management, if you're in extensive pain, is always a goal. But if you are in the business of making a baby right now, or you know in the future you'd like that as an option, we want to have that conversation about fertility preservation being important. And sometimes I'll have clients go in for their surgery and have most of their endo removed, but some left behind because the potential of damaging that ovary was just too high and it's not worth it in that instance. So you always want to make sure you're finding that person that understands your goals and looking at, if you're younger, looking at your goals long-term as well, not just right in this moment from a pain perspective.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's helpful and clears up a lot.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. 95% of women are deficient in omega-3s, one of the most important nutrients, not only for fertility, but also for the baby's and mama's health once she becomes pregnant. Omega-3 fats are critical for baby's brain and eye development and have been shown to support the cardiovascular system, immune system, and lead to healthier skin and joints. They support memory and cognitive function as well as mood. They are powerful nutrients that are not only essential for baby, but good for mama too. One of our favorite brands, Needed, has created a high quality and high potency fish oil option to get the EPA and DHA omega-3s needed for mama and baby during these critical seasons. If you had to pick one supplement after a prenatal to get on board while preparing for pregnancy, trying to conceive, while pregnant or postpartum, it's omega-3s. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, that's thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Our current fertility system is broken. Many couples receive almost zero support on optimizing their health and improving their chances of conceiving before or while trying to have a baby. 1 in 7 couples end up trying for over a year and then are often shuttled into the medication or reproductive technologies routes like IVF. Though there is a time and a place for these tools, so many couples would have different outcomes if they had the education, resources, and support I provide in my Fertility Formula Bundle. This program is a bundle of 13 mini courses about everything a couple needs to know. Each mini course consists of invaluable information, as well as exactly what to do step by step, with all of the resources I have created over many years seeing patients in practice. From mastering the cycle to boosting egg and sperm quality, balancing hormones, investigating female and male fertility, nourishing the body, fostering fertility energy, ditching toxins, reducing stress, rebalancing the gut and vaginal microbiomes, and detoxing prior to pregnancy. This bundle has it all. This is the information you aren't getting from your regular doctor that will only improve your chances of conception and the health of your future baby, no matter where you are along your fertility journey. And it costs less than one appointment with me. Visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HOPE to save 15% off the entire bundle. Again, that's www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HOPE to save 15%. Okay, back to the show.
It is complicated, and you know, more and more research is actually finding endometriosis is a little bit more like cancer in the way that it behaves. And there's a new company, I want to say it's Heron is the name, but they are working on a marker, and they discovered it because he was a cancer researcher, and there was some understanding of them finding this marker, and it's still trying to come to market, but it could potentially change the entire endo world because you can find this marker in blood and very easily. So hopefully
my
that
comes. My husband was actually just telling me about this last week. He's like,
Oh, really?
Have you heard? I'm assuming the company is like, he reads a lot about investment things. Yeah. So I'm assuming it came up in that type of, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but like, can you send me this article that you read? Because I'm sure someone's going to ask me about it sooner rather than later. And we love to see it, like any way to make diagnosis easier. Treatment, like I'm here for it. I feel like there's so much more to learn about endo. Like we made the comment on conventional medicine just potentially not having the right tools and understanding. But the reality is, you know, in our alternative care world, like we also still don't have a really great grasp or understanding or awesome tools in our toolkit either. Like I think there's just so much still with medicine as a whole, but with endo especially, that we just don't know yet. And with the further advancement and tools that we have, I think we're going to have some really great breakthroughs, hopefully in many areas, but definitely with the endo world as well.
Yeah, I hope so. No, they're a cool company. I know the CEO. We met her, or we found her in a biotech startup funding thing that my husband was in. And when I saw them present, I was like, this is going to change the whole world. You know, but a lot of people listening don't know anything about women's health or endo, and they don't realize how big, you know, this is. But hopefully they become successful and it's good. So speaking of that lack of understanding, is there anything that we know from a root cause perspective that can contribute to endo, you know, at all?
Yeah, I think honestly, the jury's still out on a lot of things. Like, I think there's this concept of inflammation, there's concept of genetics. A lot of people think it's a hormonal condition, but, you know, we don't have any reason to believe that that estrogen is causing endometriosis, but that estrogen can be impacting and growing as you're cycling, your estrogen cycling, the lesions are being impacted by that estrogen. So there's that tie and that connection there. But I think, you know, today still, like, I'm expecting perhaps more in terms of the genetic component coming out and being, you know, more understanding what's going on there. There's talk about certain gut bacteria and things being like potentially a turn-on trigger, likely for genes that you have. So everything kind of comes back to being a little bit connected. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, well, how I describe it for some women is like, it's just a very unlucky situation that we are in. And I wish we had more, you know, ideas of root cause, because the reality is it's probably multiple. And we have to look at it in a very nuanced way. That way is it's not, and it's the same with fertility, right? Like, it's sometimes one thing, but it's usually one thing plus some side things as well. And I find that with endo, we sort of have to come at it from all angles of looking at the gut, helping to keep your hormones as good and balanced as we can, reducing your inflammation, mostly as a pain management strategy, more than anything, to just try to keep you feeling more even keeled through your cycle, and looking at it that way.
Yeah, it is tricky. I do think more and more as the research comes out, it will become more apparent that it is more of a picture like cancer. And that it's similar, that it's multifactorial. It might be an interaction of genetic predispositions with environment. Yeah. There might be certain triggers for some people. It could be like toxins. For others, it might be trauma, you know, all of the same things that we see in the cancer world. And, you know, because it's growth left unchecked. It's just, it's not cancer, right? Yeah. Like, if you have endo, you don't have cancer. But it is growth in the body that is not being checked and is, like, you know, migrating. And it has similar patterns to cancer, even though it's not cancer. And I think that because for so long we thought it was a hormone problem, people were coming up against dead ends, because I don't think that's actually the mechanism behind a lot of it. And so I think as the research kind of takes it into this, okay, well, if it is more like cancer, there are these unchecked growth factors and all of these other things, like, what could we potentially be doing to help it? So I think more will come out, but doing all the things that we know to support, you know, inflammation, the immune system, the microbiome, toxins, the mental, emotional health, I think are all helpful. But the hard thing to tell women is, you know, we can work on all these things, but it doesn't mean it's going to make your growths and your lesions just disappear. And that's the hard part, is it doesn't always just, like, reverse what has been done. And that's why endo can be so tricky. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I always make it very clear with women, like, nothing that I have to give you or work with you through is going to take it away. But can we slow the progression? Can we, if you're having surgery, can we have a longer time to relapse? Because it's like a 50% recurrence rate after surgery. So can we keep you in that 50% that doesn't have recurrence? And can we manage your pain? So it's never, like, no amount of ginger is going to dissolve the lesions, but is the ginger going to help to decrease the inflammatory cytokines and therefore reduce your pain enough that you don't need as much pain management or any at all, depending on how strong that is and how well the ginger works for you. Right. And it's very, like many things, it's very subjective. Some women respond really, really well to anti-inflammatory pain management, natural pain management, and some don't. And so we have that conversation around, like, it's okay to use our conventional products for pain management. You know, you don't have to be a martyr. We don't have to suffer for the sake of being natural, but can we find a combination of things to help reduce or limit the amount, and we use that as a tool to track treatment change. If you're someone mm-hmm. who needs 6 Tylenol a day to get through day one of your cycle, the first goal for me is, can we get that down to 4? And yeah. then we get that down to 2. How about 2 in a heating pad or 1? Like, how, where's the wiggle room there? And that's how we know, like, okay, we're making positive impact, or we need to pivot after a few cycles and mix things up and see what else is going to work, because it's not always an easy solution.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely true. Can you just walk us through, if a woman is wanting to become pregnant and she either knows she has endo or she suspects endo, what are your recommendations? Like, is IVF the only option? How long do you give someone to try naturally? Like, what are kind of the processes? Do you always recommend surgery to remove lesions before getting pregnant? Kind of walk us through that.
Yeah. So I have a fairly quick push into ART with mm-hmm. endo, or at least getting our foot in the door. So if you are someone who knows you have endo, or at least maybe you haven't had the actual diagnostic piece, but all these years your doctor, you know, has had you on the pill to help manage pain or feeling fairly confident, mm-hmm. I'll give the asterisk of saying, I don't think anyone should have to wait a year to have a proper workup and diagnosis mm-hmm. and get into the clinic and all of that jazz. But if you are in a current medical stream where you are unable to get a referral quickly, I would definitely not be waiting longer than 6 months mm-hmm. just to see. Like, let's just have our conversation. Let's have a workup, and really pushing that concept of, I've been dealing with this pain for X amount of years. We're fairly confident I have endo. And before you do IVF, that needs to be investigated. Whether it's removed in that situation or not, I think it's good to just know what we're dealing with so that you can make appropriate clinical decisions. So not everyone's going to need IVF with endo. I have lots of clients who get pregnant unmedicated, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes not, but you don't always have to go that route. But we do want to have that conversation of timeline with endo. Mm-hmm. We have a bit of a longer timeline with someone who has great antral follicle count, not a whole lot of things kind of coming up, and they're young, even though we don't love putting in on age, and we don't feel like endo is there. We might have more wiggle room to play around in the early medicated stages of ART, whereas if it's someone with endometriosis, we might want to have a conversation around, like, what is your family goals? You know, do you want more than one kid? Because that's also going to play a big role in, like, does it make sense to just skip a step and go into IVF? But giving your body lots of time specifically to work on inflammation mm-hmm. and egg quality, because we know that that high inflammatory nature of endo and the higher levels of oxidative stress in your body, whether it's from triggers and things that are impacting the endo or the endo itself, we need to help your body manage that environment before going into IVF. IVF's not just going to work above that. So
yeah,
we still want to have that good time frame of helping to do what we can to set your body up for success. But I always encourage my women with really painful periods to at least, like, start having that conversation with themselves, because it's not easy, right? I mean, and you've gone down that path, and it's not the way you think you're going to make a family when you decide to make a family. And so there comes some months of just having to be mentally on board yourself with having that conversation. And so I always like to just bring it into the picture and say, you know, it's not a right now thing, but how are you feeling about this? And I'm always going to be really honest of when I think it's time to start putting those wheels in motion, because it's in their best interest. We again, mm-hmm. know from the literature that the longer women with endo wait, the less likely their chances of getting pregnant even with IVF are. And mm-hmm. so having that quicker movement for them, it's gold standard of care. So it's not what everyone wants to hear, but it's important, I think, to just make sure you understand that that door might have to be open for you. And there's a heck of a lot of things we can do before then that's hopefully going to get you pregnant prior to needing that door. And if not, you're walking through that door set up for success.
I love that. I think what you shared is so powerful. And I, having gone through IVF, trying for years and years and years to figure out a way not to, it is, especially for more health conscious people or people who it really challenges their view of how they thought their life was going to be. It can take months to, in my case, years to process that. And I think that's very smart of you as a practitioner to bring that up to somebody early on, saying, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean it will be the case, but in case it is, let's start processing that. Because when I started down our infertility journey, it was like not an option, right? IVF was not going to be an option. It was never going to be an option because I was so stubborn and I was so determined for that not to be the answer that I actually didn't even let myself start processing that it might have to be an option for years into the process. And it just delayed us even more. Because a big reason why we didn't even go into IVF sooner was just because I was just so determined for that not to be the answer.
Right.
And, you know, my journey ended up happening as it needed to and all of that. But just like I now know with severe male factor infertility, like we experienced, and I didn't know at the time, and I didn't have a good guide or doctor or practitioner to really tell me the reality of what we were dealing with. It probably would have been nice, you know, for someone to be like, I understand your desire to want to do this all naturally. And sometimes we're dealt cards in life that we don't have control over. And this, if you want a family, is probably going to be the route you have to go. So start thinking about that. And we're going to do everything we can to optimize. And, you know, who knows, you might get pregnant on your own, but like, let's start down that path. And I just never had anyone say that to me. And I just think that's really wise of you. And I know that's probably hard for some people to hear, even who are listening to this, but that is the reality sometimes. And thank goodness we have technology like IVF to help us create families. And some people might think about that differently, but I never look at my daughter and think how horrible that this exists in the world, that she could come into this world. I mean, I'm so grateful for it. And just like birth control, it shouldn't be the first line for everybody who's struggling without looking deeper. But for some people, that is the only option. And thank goodness it's there.
Yeah, totally. I think, again, it's just like the birth control. I think there's such a stigma, especially if you already come into your fertility journey in that very health conscious mindset. Mm-hmm. And it's not why people come to work with me, right?
Right?
They come to work with me because I'm the natural doctor. I'm not, not the medicine doctor. And I'm always very upfront saying, like, I'm always going to be transparent with you. Like, if there's anything I can do right in this world, it's just being transparent. And I don't feel like it's gold standard of care or me doing my due diligence to sit here and say, like, let's keep trying, when I know that the research is telling me she might need more support and more support that I can't prescribe or do for her. And we need that door open. And a big conversation I end up having with a lot of my clients is, let's just get the referral, meet with them. You're going to go through their, you know, initial workup and all the hoops and yada, yada. And they're going to lay out the plan for you. And maybe it's an IUI, maybe it's IVF. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But at the end of the day, you are still in the driver's seat. You get to say yes or no. They're just pitching to you the idea that they have based on the information that they gathered. And for some clinics, that's a lot of information. And for other clinics, that's actually not so much information. And so we just take what they give us. We digest it. You take your time. And it's my goal in working with them to just help them navigate that decision. Does this make logical sense? Like, are we at a time in their journey that doing that makes sense? We've done all the other things. We've laid the foundational groundwork. Or do we put that plan in our back pocket for a few more months? And now you're in the system. So if you do try for another couple of months and then go, okay, I'm ready for what they said, we're now not waiting 4 months for a referral, another 2 months for all the testing, another month to meet with the doctor. We're now 6 months after you made that decision. And that's now, especially in the endo community, like adding another 6 months where you're literally just waiting.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's not nothing. So the wait times are getting better, it seems, but I always kind of approach it from that angle of like, if you can get sent there before the 12 month mark, it doesn't mean you have to do anything with them. You just now are a part of their community, and you will give them a call on day one when it is time.
Yeah.
And that might not be right now. And so you don't, it doesn't have to be this big fearful, like, well, once I walk through the door, that's me shutting the door to an unmedicated pregnancy, or it's me shutting the door to like all the other things I've been trying. When for me, even as a naturopathic doctor, it's the same door. We're just widening it a little bit and kind of putting more pieces.
Yeah, I love that. A lot of people seek me out because they are naturally minded people who have figured out that IVF is the route that they have to go, and they do feel alone because it is a tricky path to walk, and there's a lot of like unprocessing and processing and all sorts of things, and you know, friends that, you know, glare at them or do all sorts of, I mean, like, it's crazy what people experience. And so I think that bringing that, just seeing birth control as a tool, seeing IVF as a wider door to fertility options, I think is a beautiful way, because making people feel guilty or bad for doing something is not helping anybody, right? So I think that's wonderful, and the sign of a wise healer. So thank you for sharing that. I have two last questions for you. One is, in the space of endo, I know we've talked about how we don't really know what's going on. You know, we're not really sure, but are there any kind of tried and true supports that you've seen either for pain management or improvement for any aspect of endo from our naturopathic toolbox that your kind of go-tos are that you could share?
Typically from like a nutrition side of things, we see in the literature that women who eat more red meat tend to have higher levels of pain in higher stage endo. And the reason for that being the dioxins in the meat. So I often say like a little bit of red meat, organic grass-fed, if we can fit that in the budget, is obviously best. And if not, that's cool. I don't take like a super strong stance on that, but less is best from a red meat perspective. So we need lots of protein, but we want to lean more towards those lean proteins and chicken and fish and that sort of thing. And I do find a good portion of my endo clients notice a big difference with just that change. And comes the struggle of getting enough protein if they were big red meat eaters. So really wanting to make sure we're getting a good diversity of protein in. But I find that's a good kind of starting point from a nutrition standpoint. And then looking at the other various inflammatory foods, you know, we don't have any research that I've seen yet around gluten and dairy and soy, but we know that some women are more reactive to those things than others. So paying attention to your body and your personal food sensitivities is also really important. If you know when you eat a lot of gluten, you're super bloated and you feel like crap and your gut's all messed up and you have all these symptoms, that might be a trigger for you. It might not be, but it might be. So playing around with your personal tolerance levels of your own kind of inflammatory bucket of foods is also really, really valuable. And then from a supplement standpoint, my kind of go-tos, I mentioned ginger. It's usually the first thing I go to, mostly because we have endo research and we have dysmenorrhea research. So even with just women with pain, so not confirmed endo, but just pain with their periods, they've actually found that ginger can be just as impactful as naproxen and Tylenol for pain management. So, but so much easier on your gut. Ginger is also really nice if you get bloated. So it's often a good time in those first couple of days of your period as well. So we play around with ginger with a lot of clients. Capsules, better than tea from a therapeutic level perspective. But if you like tea, sipping on a nice ginger, warm ginger tea through that time can also be really, really nice. Other things that have some research, so omega-3s are another one that has some research. And again, inflammation, antioxidant, getting more fish in your diet is also going to be a really good way. Fish is a very acquired taste for a lot of people. So if you don't eat a lot of fish, you probably should be taking an omega-3 fatty acid. So having that in your either in your diet or in your supplement cupboard is also really, really helpful. And then I really like castor oil packs in and around that time for pain management. Some women shy, I think there's, you know, some people shy away from them around your period because they're worried it's going to increase bleeding and with the flow. And there's, you know, all the Facebook groups and Reddit and everything saying like, don't do this and don't do that. We're always doing it wrong. But I find some of my women actually feel really nice and supportive, mm-hmm. a nice warm castor oil pack leading into their cycle and even through their cycle to just help again with pain management. So that could also be something you can explore that's safe as well.
I love that. I love castor oil packs. I mean, I haven't like dove deep into the actual research of how castor oil pack works on a mechanistic perspective, but it has to reduce inflammation because
I don't think there is any research.
I know there probably isn't, but I just know personally, like if I have eaten something that my body doesn't love and I'm bloated and inflamed, a castor oil pack will literally reduce my bloat like 80%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that has to be a reduction in inflammation. So it makes sense that it would help with painful periods. And, you know, I just think, yeah, there's so many things on the internet that scare people into doing everything. But I'm also a big fan of castor oil packs. So yeah, good job for mentioning that.
I call castor oil packs my elder wisdom. I'm like, at school, everyone loved castor oil packs. Like, it did not matter what you had. It was, I'll just give them a castor oil pack. That'll be fine. But no one ever explained to me, like, well, how? Like, how does this work? But so it was something I shied away from for many years because I was like, I can't explain this. Mm-hmm. I have no data. And I'm a very research focused practitioner. And then over the last year or so, I was like, you know what? I just love castor oil packs. Like, they do help so many things. And I'm sitting here in my house wearing mine all the time. And I feel like I'm gatekeeping this like awesome tool. But the reality is like, we don't really know. Like, we don't really know how it works, why it works. We just know that it's incredibly anti-inflammatory and a lot of women respond really, really well.
Oh, I love that. My last question is, if someone has endo or suspect they have endo and they're wanting to get pregnant, do we pay attention to the male side of fertility with that case?
Oh my gosh, always.
let's speak about that because I see this, you know, as anyone who's followed me knows how I'm so passionate about male fertility and how they're so forgotten. And I think it's the worst when there's an obvious issue with the female.
100%.
Because they're like, that's the problem. And then they just don't even think that they're a factor. Can you speak to that?
I mean, that's the issue is as soon as there's an overt female diagnosis, there's a complete disregard for the male side of things. When in reality, 60% of infertility is a combination of male and female. So how I look at it is like, we're literally wasting time by ignoring that side just because, and we don't just see this with endo. I see it a lot with PCOS as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, I have PCOS. Okay. Well, you know, did your doctor run a semen analysis? Well, no, I have PCOS. Well, okay. But you know, that literally means nothing to me. Like we have to pretend that you're two separate people. Like that's just fact, right? You're two separate people. Just because there's endo, we know that that's probably a piece, and endo comes with, you know, a whole potential slew of comorbidities as well in terms of higher rates of thyroid issues and gut issues and immune issues. Like there's a whole ladder of things that we want to be looking into in the fertility space once we uncover this endo diagnosis, but we can still have low concentration, low motility, high DNA fragmentation and low motility and not be managing that while we're also managing this other side of things. So it's so, so important regardless of your diagnosis as the woman that the male side isn't being neglected because I've had this in early days of practice of being like very focused on the female, and a year goes by and learning that the male side had very little sperm and their only option was IVF. And I still 7 or 8 years later, still think about that case to this day, saying like, I poorly mismanaged that. And now it's like a non-negotiable. I don't care how early you are in your journey. we have to look at both. We just have to.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Thank you for shedding light on that, because we can't scream it from the rooftops loud enough about how that part of fertility is just so mismanaged on every level, you know, not you, but I mean, I've done the same thing. You know, it's like you have females that come to you and you're treating the person in front of you. And, you know, I've even had cases where, according to them, the man doesn't want to test or care. And then that's really tricky. But it just needs to be a priority. And it's so easy and so simple to just run a semen test and just see, just like you preparing people ahead of time for IVF to process that. The biggest shame about male factor is that if you make any shifts or changes, it just takes a long time. And we don't want to wait until you're already at your wit's end and then find out there's a problem and then try to make changes. And it's just, everything is better when you do it earlier. So
yeah, totally.
Thank you for that.
And never assume if your partner has kids in a previous relationship, never assume that means they're fine. Either because time changes things, right? Like that was even 3 years ago. Like a lot can change in 3 years. And so I find that happens as well with some of my clients. They're like, oh, well, the doc, like we didn't run a semen analysis or he's not doing one. He hasn't done one for whatever reason, but like he's had a child before. And we just assume like that's the green check mark. But I even say this in couples that are coming back around to me the second time. If years have passed, it's like, well, we need another repeat semen analysis because just because you guys did get pregnant and it wasn't a male factor the first time, that doesn't mean we're not now dealing with something new. We have to start from scratch. So we never want to assume.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I know we could do a whole episode on male fertility. Maybe we will. Is there anything else you want to say as we wrap up about endo? And also, where can people find you and learn more from you and work with you?
Yeah, for the endo community, like know that I feel for all of you if you are someone who has a diagnosis or is dealing with significant pain and is being continuously brushed off. It can take over 5 years to get a proper endo diagnosis. Even outside of the fertility community, even longer sometimes. And so as a practitioner in this space, like I'm just as frustrated as you that it's not easier. And like we talked about earlier, it's one of those things that when someone starts describing it, like my heart just sinks because I know it's going to be a struggle. Like it's almost never easy to get a diagnosis, and it's certainly not quick. At least not here in Ontario, you know, in other places maybe, but here it's not a quick thing. And when we're wanting to get pregnant, that can be the most discouraging. So know that if you're listening going, oh, I have pain and I never really thought about this before. And if you're actively trying to get pregnant or you know that's something down the line in your future, there's no harm in starting to kind of have those conversations and do the research and you know, whether it leads somewhere or not, at least you know you're advocating for yourself now and not a year into your fertility journey, which can always be that much more challenging for you mentally, of course.
Yeah.
For me, you can find me on Instagram at Fertility Confidence Method. I also host my own podcast, which Dr. Leah was on a few episodes ago, I feel. So that's the Fertility Confidence Podcast. You can come and hang out with me over there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for all of your wisdom and knowledge. I know that everyone's going to love this episode, and I just am so grateful that you have come on and that you've shared everything that you have. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.